Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, it's time for another edition of Locked On Kings as we focus in on all things NBA and certainly the Sacramento Kings. And it's a pleasure today to be joined by ESPN writer, covers the NBA, Kevin Arnovitz. Kevin, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad we've kind of, I would say, made it through the dog days of August, which is kind of a phrase for baseball. But basketball's done a good job, haven't they, of kind of almost making this 12 months. I mean, it's topical almost every day, which is a pretty good job by the NBA, I think.
I think social media in the last 7-8 years has confirmed, I think, what we always suspected, is that people love transactions.
Yeah.
They love possibility. They love trade rumors. I think anything that addresses or speaks to the hope of fans, what could be possibility. One funny thing that happens is you get to late May, early June, and basically 4 teams are still in it, and then you've got 26 other teams sort of twiddling their thumbs waiting for the draft. And once you hit free agency, it's really, other than like the first week or two of this actual season, it's really the only time of the year where kind of, you know, your team, even if they've won 29 games, in fact, especially if they've won 29, 30, 31 games, are a focal point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the moment when every single fan base says, hey, anything can happen right now that can better our team. Or And social media, of course, has compounded that, right? Because you can have a conversation 24 hours a day about these various possibilities, or what your front office is doing well, or what they're doing poorly, or sheer speculation. And so what it has happened is just that you get this 12-month cycle now.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll take a few weeks off. It'll get a little sleepy for a while. But media day is what, like 5 weeks away?
Right.
6 weeks away?
Yeah, it's here. And what's great, I think it's a great perspective that you say we're talking about hope. And I think maybe we're talking about different levels of hope, because it just seems so clear at this moment that the Warriors are by far the favorite. And so the teams that are competing for championships, yeah, there's hope. But then there's teams, like you mentioned, that are just trying to get better. So it almost seems like maybe there's layers of hope around the league.
Yeah, I forget which executive said it, but I think the old adage is, in the NBA, you better be selling either success or hope.
Yeah.
The teams with neither tend to run into problems. But this is the time of year everybody has hope. No matter how futile it may seem, there are nobody's got a loss yet.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of, I think, what propels this.
So where would you find Kings fans? Up here in Sacramento, people are genuinely excited, Kevin, of where – kind of where they are. Feels like there's a direction. They're not there, obviously, yet, but made the big move to move DeMarcus Cousins. They're comfortable with going young, mixed in the veterans, but I'd be curious, we're so close to it. What's your perception of what the Kings have done basically since the trade deadline to where we are today?
I think right now they're sort of in this corrective mode, and although I tend to obviously believe that wins and losses are fundamentally governed by personnel and what you do on the floor, look, I don't think it's any secret this is an organization that desperately needed a cultural makeover. And I don't think you're laying that on any one person. I am a huge fan of DeMarcus Cousins' skill set. I don't think any one person was responsible for the toxicity that existed in Sacramento. Everyone shares a burden there. But the bottom line is, you know, with his departure, there's sort of this vacuum. And what kind of team are we? For so long, he was sort of the focal point. To the extent that the Sacramento Kings are going to succeed or fail, it was going to be based on the success or failure of this player, not only on the floor, but to lead the team, to construct sort of an identity around it. And that's gone. And so now what do you have? And you know, the skies have sort of parted, and what you have now is a really young, creative point guard, and De'Aaron Fox will be playing behind a veteran, savvy, almost combo guard who, you know, for the first time in a long time, you know, there's sort of defense at the top of the floor there with George Hill. You know, he can spot up, shoot. But more than anything, he's sort of perceived as one of these guys in the league with gravitas, and there is an adult in the room, so to speak. And you know, at shooting guard, you have Buddy Hield, and who's sort of a mystery guest. And I feel badly. I think he's been burdened now with a ridiculous set of expectations, and I'm very happy that Fox is there to sort of help carry the load.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where I'm at on Hield yet. I think he compromises you defensively. I don't think he's a great athlete. I think his success or failure, you know, as a pick and role player, though he plays obviously the off guard position, is eh.
Yeah.
And you know, but he very possibly could be a fantastic shooter, and has shown glimpses of that. You know, and then you obviously have these front court youth brigade here, and I mean, I almost lose track because I mean, not only do you, I'm a huge Labissiere fan. I mean, Scott Labissiere is a fascinating, kind of enigmatic. I don't know if I want to call him a stretch big, but he certainly has range. There's just a lot of finesse and refinement there, and I think those who got to see him after the trade last season, you know, all of a sudden it's like, wait, but this guy's got some game, and it's not awkward, and it's not, and it's pretty intuitive, and there's a lot there, and. You know, you have Willie Cauley-Stein, you have Papianis, you draft Harry Giles, and I don't believe there is any such thing as a logjam when you're, you know, a team that's looking at wins totals in the 30s. So I don't think it's an intrinsic problem, but you've now kind of complemented them with, you know, a veteran in Zach Randolph, who, you know, comes over from Memphis, is, and I don't think anybody would have guessed, you'd say this 10, 12 years ago, but with these kind of savvy veteran presidents, he's a little bit of a throwback in terms of just skill.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the last of the Mohicans. I mean, just a post-up player with beautiful footwork and whatnot, and I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know, but I thought it was a curious move and sort of speaks, I think, along the lines of the Vince Carter and George Hill acquisitions to, hey, look, we know we have young guys that we need to get some court time to. In fact, in the front court, you have just a ton of guys and not very many minutes, especially in a league where, you know, how many bigs do you want on the floor at any given time? Sometimes the answer is going to be one. So, I mean, at most you have 96 minutes to distribute, probably less than that. Now you're going to give a good portion of those to Randolph. So on one hand, you could say, you know, what are they thinking here? You know, they're essentially blocking a youth brigade that needs to get some experience. On the other hand, I do like it because I do think that this is a unique situation. I mean, they just need to infuse that locker room and sort of the practice facility with this. I mean, with, I don't want to say veteran savvy so much as just a sense that you know what the project of an 82-game season is because
right.
You've been in the league for 12 to 15 years in some cases, because you've been through it, because you played late into May against the top competition. And though Randolph is not a conventional leader, you know, and people might raise eyebrows at some of the, you know, what's materialized in the last few weeks, he's ultimately a guy who is well-respected by teammates for the most part. Hey, not going to run the floor in practice. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here.
Right.
But I think just in general, it sort of been through the worst. And more than anything, I think, and somewhat is somewhat of an avatar for a guy, you know, as a guy who, hey, has been able to change his persona in the league. That is sort of a morality tale, and that, hey, you can, you know, you don't have to be the ball stopping guy who, in the Knicks uniform, is hoisting that three with 18 seconds left on the shot clock. You know, out of nowhere, one of the, you know, kind of famous clips of Knicks futility, you know, kind of Zach Randolph is embodying everything that was terrible about, you know, about that period. You know, you can actually become a guy who, I mean, they're going to retire his jersey in Memphis.
Yeah.
He was a focal point of one of the more consistently successful, hardworking work ethic teams in the league over the last decade. And that's a huge thing. And so in some ways, he's not a conventional role model. Or a guy the Rooks are going to look up to. But I do think that, you know, alongside a staff that knows him very well. I mean, you're talking about Dave Yeager and Bob Thornton and, you know, all those guys from Memphis who kind of came over and are now in Sacramento. So I think it provides a level of, and again, funny to say, it's stability in the locker room. And so I think you can look at the what's happened in a couple of different ways. On one hand, hey, what are you thinking? Why are you bringing in veterans to a team that is now banking on youth? On the other, I think you say this is a special project and culture is a big part of it. And so having a George Hill and a Zach Randolph and a Vince Carter, who, I mean, is an absolute, I mean, he was the mayor. I mean, you cannot have a better guy, you know, in the locker room, essentially almost as a player coach. I mean, you know, I'm almost reminded kind of when Portland brought in Earl Watson, when Damian Lillard was a rookie. And sort of everybody scratching their head, why are you bringing in this old point guard? And, you know, the staff there telling you, look, we're basically getting a player coach. And I think, you know, of course, for the purposes of the Kings, though, because they're so, I think, bereft of talent on the wing, Carter might be your best small forward. So in that respect, he's not just a guy who's going to, you know, kind of wave a towel. He might actually, they might need 20, 25 minutes from him certain nights to get a win. So, but you know, how important are those wins right now? I don't know. I mean, to me, goals 1 and 1A and 1B are getting De'Aaron Fox, Scout, LeBissiere, and Buddy Hield to a point where they can be, you know, 38-minute-a-night starters on, you know, a top-contending NBA team. And I think that is first. So I'm not so much – normally I'd be, hey, why are you bringing these old guys in? And I still don't completely know that I am 100% behind it, but I also appreciate it. A, it's not my money. And I don't think this idea that, hey, you strangle your flexibility. Look, I don't think the Kings are going to go out and get a max guy in the next 3 years, right? You're looking at, if there's going to be a max guy on the Sacramento Kings, it's going to be De'Aaron Fox, and it's going to be in a few years. Like, I this idea that I don't worry about certain teams eating their cap space with these veteran signings because, hey, you know, you always want to retain flexibility. I think even more than anything else, to be able to absorb these sort of lousy salaries. For teams that are willing to give you draft picks to do so. And that's always why I like to have a little cap room on my spreadsheet if I'm a Kings-type team.
Sure.
And so in that respect, I wish they had a little more going forward. But I don't worry that, wait, you signed these guys, now how the hell are you going to be able to go out and make an offer to Russell Westbrook or something? I mean, that's, I think you can look at it in two ways. But look, at the end of the day, it's going to be, I mean, there's a very specific approach on a micro scale, those three players I spoke about. And by the way, in addition to Giles Papagiannis and Cauley Stein, and I mean, I put those guys up there as well. But I think more than anything is just, you know, can this franchise not be one of the five most dysfunctional in the league in 2 years?
And that's
no small thing. And, right. and that requires all kinds of gymnastics. And you know, this is part of it. And perhaps having George Hill and Zach Randolph and Vince Carter, you know, just the sheer climate of a locker room changes, the practice changes, everything. You know, Dave Yeager's voice sounds differently when, you know, when there's three veterans who are nodding and, you know, sort of pledged allegiance to him. And I think that's important for younger guys to see.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, where, again, feeling so close to it here, we everybody in Sacramento sees what national media says about the Kings, and they've been a punching bag, an easy target, low-hanging fruit, however you describe it, that they haven't been successful. They've had their missteps, Vlade included. But it does, to me, feel like, Kevin, they are kind of getting it right now. But I don't know that they're all the way there. But are they still, kind of as you just alluded to, do you think they're closer to getting out of that, hey, they're so dysfunctional, they can't get out of their own way? Do you sense that they're starting to get out of their own way?
I mean, yeah. I think it would be nice if, you know, you could hire executives who then don't leave a couple months later and actually just sort of at some point have a executive team that you're willing to move ahead with defined duties and roles that have the absolute trust of ownership and, you know, so the trust of the coaching staff and for that matter, business affairs and anybody else. I mean, I think that would be, I mean, so they got a ways to go and they can't solve that overnight. Right, like that's not something you can't say. Hey, we have a really solid structure until it's been there for a while, and time it needs to pass for that to happen. So, I mean, I'm still waiting to see. You know, hey, are there, you know, what is the decision making process like? I mean, what informs these decisions? Is it the last person that spoke to the most powerful guy making the decisions? Is it a collective sensibility and value and kind of a a collective sense of values that are shared? Are the priorities all the same? You know, does everyone have the same perception? And look, there can always be disagreements. In the best front office in the league, certain parties in the front office like a player more than the other. You can go to San Antonio and Boston, and there are differing opinions about, you know, well, how good is DeJounte Murray, or is Marcus Smart a guy we can build with? I mean, I think you can always have that. But, I think that's sort of the time is going to tell.
Yeah.
You know, Sacramento is a place. I mean, as usual, it starts with ownership, and it will always start with ownership. You know, and by the way, owners can grow too. I don't believe that anybody is of fixed identity. I've written nasty things about public front offices and other teams, and have watched over the course in the evolution of a decent front office was a moment when they were terrible. Just like any player who doesn't help you on the floor and racks up terrible, you know, plus minus in his first couple seasons, and the next thing you know, at year five and year six, he's, you know, a league leader. So I think I'm somebody who just believes that people can change. And I believe that all it takes for, you know, a culture to change or for habits to be broken is for the person who's in possession of those habits to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, you know, I'm not going to meddle in the decision-making of my basketball operations department. Yeah, I want to be present. I want to have my voice heard. Hey, it's my team. I am the governor. I'm actually responsible for the pecuniary fortunes of this franchise, and those fortunes will in some ways be based on the success or failure of the roster, which means I want to have a say in the general vision of the team. But I think that's all it takes is for someone to say, yeah, you know what? Trial and error. You know, I'm evolved. Like this hasn't worked the way we've done it. Well, what needs to change? Oh, okay. Oh, so I delegate responsibility to those that have the expertise. Okay. Are we sure these people have the expertise? Oh, if they don't, then let's replace them. If they do, let's empower them. And I think so. I'm never somebody who believes that, oh, the guy will never change. I mean, in certain ownership situations, I do believe there's enough empirical evidence to suggest that person will never change. I don't have great optimism for New York because I just think there's enough. And I'm not trying to, be a jerk about it. It's just I think there's enough empirical evidence to suggest that if change were going to come, it would have happened by now.
Right.
And I think it's something you have to watch. I mean, year five, six, seven of ownership is generally when, you know, you sort of the baby fad of a rookie owner who has succeeded in every facet of life and somehow thinks he's a genius about everything. You know, if there is going to be an adoption of humility, it should come right about now. And we'll see. Look, there's some really good signs. I love the coaching staff. There's some really good talent, you know, inside, you know, at various levels of the front office. I think the infrastructure is being built. I want to see what they do with science. I want to see, you know, just, you know, the general priorities. There's a gorgeous building. They're making money in Sacramento, which is a miracle for any small market franchise, and they're doing exceptionally well. So, and that's not nothing. I think sometimes good sense in one part of an organization can bleed over into another. So I think there's some really encouraging signs. I love watching. I got to watch a couple games in December. I mean, I was talking about the arena last night with somebody. It's a jewel box. It's an absolute, you know, it's just great temple to technology, and it's just a great airy space and intimate. And it's just it's one of my favorite arenas in the league. So I absolutely love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see, but we'll see. And judgment cannot be rendered, and I don't think we can solidly say, hey, the worm has turned in Sacramento until we see kind of a record of consistency and stability in management.
Yeah, totally makes sense there. So, Kevin, one other thing, I'm going to step away from the Kings and kind of, there's two things still kind of hanging out there in the league right now, and that's two pretty high-profile players, Carmelo Anthony and Kyrie Irving. When the season starts, what in your mind, where are those two guys playing?
It's a tough one. So let's take the Carmelo thing first. And I talked to a source this week that said they wonder, I think that they are kind of slow playing the Carmelo situation. And one reason is they're still wanting to figure out if they're truly in this Kyrie sweepstake, the Knicks I'm talking about. You know, do they have the capacity to get Kyrie? Are they in there? And the other is that right now, obviously, Carmelo holds the leverage. He can approve or reject any trade. I mean, he has a no-trade clause, and he'll have to waive it for the Knicks to be able to deal him. And right now, that list of teams that he'll approve is very, very small. I mean, it's kind of an audience of, I think, officially now of one. Well, let me say officially. I don't think there's any, there's nothing in writing, I think. But in order to get him to expand that list, he might need to be frustrated a little longer. So are they in any hurry to make a deal with one team when they can hopefully talk him into, say, maybe expanding the market? And just by virtue of doing that, you start, right now the Rockets are bidding against themselves. And so I think, it's in the Knicks' interest to see if what can they do to get Carmelo to expand that list. And doing nothing on the trade front might be the way to do that. I mean, if Carmelo gets so miserable or so eager to get out, or that he says, okay, all right, here's three more teams I'll accept. I think that would help the Knicks' fortune. So I don't know if that gets resolved immediately. I mean, I say it's dormant until it's not. And at any moment, as we've learned, news can drop that, okay, they've had a conversation and now Carmelo's amenable to this team or that team or that team. Kyrie's the interesting case, and I don't know. I sense they might start the season with him, and I wasn't as certain about that a couple of weeks ago. But I wonder if December 15th, some new situations aren't open. There were murmurs about Minnesota. I think Jeff Teague would need to be involved in any trade there. I don't know how eager Minnesota is to are they willing to basically distract themselves from the project at hand to say, okay, let's just get to December 15th and we'll get Kyrie? Or do they want to give this thing a go with Teague? And that's going to be an interesting thing. But I wonder if for Kyrie, will there be teams that are, maybe they have some early success. Maybe they realize, hey, we're competing for a top four seed in the West. We're one player away, and is Kyrie that player? Will Kyrie give any indication that he's willing to kind of stay put? Now, I personally don't think there's no commit. 2 years is a lifetime in the NBA. And, it's not as if, they're buying a rental. I think when you have two seasons, it's no longer a rental. It's a medium-term lease. But obviously teams would love to have a sense of whether or not he'd stay longer, and I just don't think he can guarantee that. But even an indication, even a hint, even a loose pledge, I think, might convince some team, to take a bigger gamble than they might otherwise not. So, that's going to be interesting to see. But I sense that, I think he very well get dealt. I also think that, this could happen after teams sort of take inventory of what they have 6-7 weeks into the season.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Certainly the season coming up soon, we are all looking forward to it. Kevin, this was fun for us. We'd love to do it again. Continue your great work as a writer for ESPN and covering the NBA. Thank you so much. And like I said, we'll do this again sometime.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Kevin Arnovitz joining us, ESPN writer covering the NBA. Pretty good knowledge, loves the building. That was obviously very clear. I like that. And he sees some potential, certainly what the Kings are doing in their growth, and we'll see what happens in this other mess with Carmelo and Kyrie. Thank you so much to Kevin Arnovitz. Thank you to all of you for listening. Again, checking us out daily on Audio Boom, on iTunes. Subscribe there. Leave us ratings and reviews. Also, Google Play and Stitcher, all the different outlets you can find us on a daily basis here on Locked On Kings. So again, thank you so much for listening. We're back again tomorrow for another edition of Locked On Kings.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.